trouble. Start the recording, Esther.
I'm trying to make Randy.
We're used to being late, I guess. Or on time.
You're on.
Okay. We'll begin the recording. I call this regular scheduled meeting of the North Dakota Public Service Commission to order. It is 10:01, Wednesday, January 4th, 2017. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Commission. I'm joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchek and Commissioner Brian Culk. So we have a quorum in the area of opening comments. I certainly want to welcome all the legislators back to town. It's partially a busy and hectic time, but partially old home week for me when I see them come back to town. And as glad as I am to have them back, it's always with a little bit of melancholy when I look around in the group where I served and see really dear old friends like Senator Tim Flackel and Senator David O'Connell that are no longer there. And, of course, the changes bring fresh ideas and fresh perspective, and so that's good, but you miss your friends too. Listening to the governor's budget yesterday, or his state of the state, I guess, really brought a lot of reflections to me for our agency here. When he talked about using data collection, I really thought it's interesting that this commission was kind of ahead of the game on that, because 2 years ago, one of our initiatives was to use more data collection in the green licensing area and be able to process it in a different way and do it here. And that ran into to challenges and roadblocks and was ultimately not accepted. And I think that to summarize the argument of it was that it was open records concerns by the people involved in the industry, and they didn't want all that data collected. And so while I think there's a lot of good ideas there, I'm sure that as they proceed through the session, they're going to find that there's instances where there's roadblocks to data collection as well. But it made me feel good that we were kind of actually ahead of that game by a couple years. And as you look at our current budget and when we present our testimony on that on Monday, I think once again in the whole concept of reinventing government and finding new ways to do things and do the important things that are currently being done but with less resources, once again, the Public Service Commission is not trying to block that or defer all the heavy lifting to other agencies. This commission has embraced it and are at the forefront of it and move forward, and I think the legislature is going to be pleased with the budget that we're proposing. I don't know if there's an order to the opening comments. Commissioner Culk?
There's order for everything around here, Commissioner.
Okay.
I noticed that you used the gavel that you made when you were in shop class for your opening, so I appreciate it.
We started it out. Mr. Zahara, God rest his soul, would be proud.
Very well, then. Well, I just congratulate Commissioner Crispin on his first meeting starting it out, and thanks, Julie, again for her work. We did all the pomp and circumstance back in December. But have you noticed how much more relaxed Commissioner Fedorchek is and how much more stressed Commissioner Crispin is?
So sweet.
Anyway, the only opening comments I would have is just you talked about the session. We testified this morning, House Bill 1026, about changes to one call. And so we, Carly, with utility shareholders, did a nice job with all the stakeholders, and we support the bill as it is. But we're off to the races now. We've got a meeting here, I guess, this afternoon about all the bills, and the staff continues to do a great job. And thanks, staff, for the last couple of weeks. People had time off for vacation and all that. But we came back to work on Tuesday, and everybody had everything ready to roll. So thank all of you for that. Everybody did a nice job. A lot of snow out there, so if you have a natural gas service, make sure you clean out around your vents. And if something seems wrong, make sure you call the utilities. So that's all that I would have for opening comments.
Mr. Fedorchek?
Mr. Chairman, I want to make sure I'm following parliamentary procedure very closely with you in the lead here this morning and for the next 2 years. I appreciate having Randy in charge now, and know he's going to do a fine job as our chairman, and look forward to supporting you any way I can.
Thank you.
Along the lines of your comments about the state of the state, I also made note of Governor Burgum's comments about the use of technology and the way technology should be embraced by state government to help make us more efficient and more innovative and streamline our services. And I think that I share that thought with Governor Burgum and really appreciate his insistence that just because things have been done one way or done at all for the last 100 years, that they need to be done and that they need to be continued to be done and in the same way. And I think we have really brought that attitude here to the PSC in this budget and in our operations over the last 4 years, really questioning what we're doing and why we're doing it and how we're doing it. And I think you're seeing us embrace, it's maybe not as quickly as some would like, especially myself, but we are getting more streamlined, using more technology to streamline our operations. And you see that in our weights and measures area where we've got some new applications being developed to streamline that work. We're definitely, it's a key part of our licensing proposal in the budget is streamlining that division and relying more on technology and online applications and that sort of thing rather than pushing the paper around. So I think that's been a central part of that. And then we're also working on online application for all of our companies and all of the different tariffs and filings that companies need to make with us. We are moving. It's part of it. Probably will be a 2-year project started a year ago, and moving to make all of those processes available online so we can get rid of the sending in of 7 big, huge or 10 big, huge manuals for every rate case and all of that sort of thing. We're moving to getting those applications online, and I think that's a step in the right direction, and it's consistent with a vision that Governor Burgum outlined yesterday, so I look forward to working with him in that regard. Another area that I noticed, and I don't typically make these kind of comments, but it struck me yesterday, and so I thought I would share. We've got all these newcomers in the legislature, which is so exciting. They're just wide-eyed and full of energy and ideas and a little bit of trepidation, I think, as they realize that there's a lot to learn and a lot to get done in a short amount of time to do it. So it's wonderful to have all these new people and these fresh faces involved, and it's really so healthy for our state and for our economy, and we're really lucky, I think, to have that kind of interest in government and that kind of help and support in delivering good government services. What I noticed among the newcomers and just even sitting in the audience at the House session yesterday, the joint session, was a lot of women. And I don't normally make these kind of comments, but I want to make them in this context when it isn't being triggered by some alternative motive like a bill that's requiring, you know, equal pay or something like that. There are 16 Republican legislators who are women, and 5 of them were just newly elected. And if you look at the statewide elected officials, there's 5 women, 2 Supreme Court justices, and 3 other statewide elected officials that are women, Republican women, myself included. And then when you look at the cabinet heads, you have at least 6 of the cabinet heads, the people leading our cabinet agencies, are also women in the top jobs in those agencies. So I think it's worth noting that there are a lot of women involved in the ranks here. They're Republican women. And while I don't make these comments intending to be partisan, it's not often stated. It's something that just quietly happens because these folks are qualified and have worked their way to these jobs and are doing and are performing regardless of gender. And so I just wanted to make those comments this morning because I noted it yesterday and thought this was a good time to make those comments where it wasn't being driven by some alternative means to highlight gender issues. So, yay for us.
Mr. Chair, please have one more comment I'd like to
Absolutely,
add.
Commissioner.
It comes to my attention that now I've worked longer with the two of you than I did with Tony and Kevin. So this is a milestone for me today. And I think back to 4 years ago right now, we had 2 newbie commissioners here, and I was like, oh, my God, what are we going to do? But you talked about – what got me thinking about it, Julie, was when you talked about the changes that started. When you two both came in here, there was a chance we had 2 brand-new commissioners that had a majority to move an agenda, and you guys came in right away and started questioning everything, where some of the things that I'd questioned 4 years ago didn't move because you just got one person questioning it. Serious. But the changes that started 4 years ago because of what the questions you guys brought to the table, I think really put us in a nice position. So it's a milestone. Thank you for that. And you talked about more women involved. I noticed yesterday, too, that when it came time for veterans to stand up, we've got elected officials, Randy, myself, Jared Tufte, and Josh are all veterans. And you look out in the crowd of those that got elected, there's a large number of veterans that are out there, too. So we're just seeing a larger group of groups that maybe have been unrepresented in the past. So mm-hmm. I'll agree with you.
And it's fun when, like, my kids were at the ceremony yesterday, so I'd appreciate my daughter was there witnessing this, but also my sons saw it, too. Those things, veterans, young people, women, older people, you know, just a real diverse group of folks stepping up to serve in the legislature and in other roles, leadership roles in the state. And then somebody from the private sector like Governor Burgum, who he wouldn't have to do this. I mean, he could have lived out his life and devoted his attention in a thousand other ways, like anybody could, but really to jump into the fray and to this type of a role as governor that is all-consuming and to really focus his passions and his experience in that way is a real blessing for our state, and I think it's going to be proved to be a really interesting next 4 years and I think a progressive and exciting time for our state.
Very good observations. Okay, we'll move on to the consent agenda, and we have six items on the consent calendar. I move passage.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Mr. Chairman, if I might make one comment on the consent agenda. There was a motion on the consent that to hire a consultant for the rate case, the MDU rate case. And I just wanted to comment on this because this is something that often gets questioned on how do we evaluate rate cases and how do we hold the company responsible for, you know, what they're asking for in terms of rates and how do we evaluate it because the company has so many resources and we have relatively few. And I think I just wanted to make the point because we're hiring this consultant now that this is how we do it. We use the fees paid for by the company to us to process these rate requests, rate increase requests. We hire outside experts who spend their entire career looking at these issues and are skilled at tearing apart the books of utilities, and they do that just that, tear apart these rate requests and try to find ways to say, no, this isn't legitimate, this isn't how it should be, looking out for all the customers, both the residential and business customers, and they are basically the advocacy staff on the other side of the company in evaluating the rate cases. So I think it's just a piece of the whole process that is often missed by the public and misunderstood what it means to have advocacy staff and how we actually effectively do that. So I just wanted to make that point today that, you know, since we're making that decision today as well.
Well, that's a good observation. Probably also important to note that it's a competitively bid opportunity and multiple consultants have opportunities to bid for that.
Yes.
Okay. I'll move to my portfolio then. RC1, I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for comment in Total Call Mobile Incorporated, designated eligible carrier, cancellation/application, case number PU-16-769.
Second.
On December 18th of 2013, the commission designated Total Call Mobile as an eligible telecommunications carrier for the purpose of receiving federal universal service support for low-income customers in all the study areas of North Dakota. On December 19th of 2016, almost exactly 3 years later, the commission received Total Call's notice or intention to relinquish their ETC designation. Under federal law, the commission shall permit a carrier to relinquish its designation for ETC for an area served by more than one carrier prior to permitting a carrier to cease providing service in an area served by more than one carrier. The state commission shall require the remaining carriers to ensure that all customers will continue to be served. So the commission will receive written comments in this proceeding until close of business on February 17th of 2017.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And RC2, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-16-773, granting the request of East Central Grain Marketing Incorporated of Minnetonka, Minnesota, to operate as a roving grain buyer in North Dakota.
Second.
East Central Grain is acting as a broker or will be acting as a broker in North Dakota. They filed a $50,000 surety bond. East Central has not transacted business as a roving grain buyer in the state to this point. Statutory compliance has been met, and staff recommends that the roving grain buyer license be issued.
We have a motion, a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my agenda. Commissioner Kalk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question was... Conrad, is that your first motion you prepared, the grain elevator motion?
Well, I'll be honest, I didn't prepare it. I was out of town.
All right. So you still haven't had your first motion? All right. Trying to throw you a bone here. All right. Fair enough. Okay. They do a great job taking care of us. All right. Item BK1. I move the commission adopt the order on consent agreement and Public Service Commission Plot Construction ND LLC Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number GS14216.
Second.
Thank you, Julie. The little background in this case, in April of 2014, the commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from Paul Riley, a district superintendent for MDU, who, of course, operates in town and throughout the state. Basically, they alleged that plot construction caused damage to a 2-inch medium-pressure natural gas main distribution line with the backhoe. The area where the pipe was damaged was 621 East 42nd Street in Williston, North Dakota. And the allegation was basically they did not conduct the evacuation in a careful and prudent manner. Our staff looked through this and felt that there was enough there that they should file a formal complaint. They did so. Plot filed a response contesting the allegations. But in the discussion that ensued between our staff and the company agreed that a consent order would make sense. And so Plot agrees to remit $2,000 payable to North Dakota Public Service Commission within 10 business days of service of this order. And just want to thank our staff because they've really, I know, been working hard on these cases, and we've really moved a lot of them forward to decision in the last month, and this is one more of these. And in this case, I certainly think the company, Plot being, they got the message, and fortunately for MDU and the customers up there, the damage was not, I won't say not that significant. Nobody was injured, and they were able to repair it. But certainly we need to keep track of these, and so everything in this appears to be in order.
We have a motion, a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right, thanks, Darrell. Item BK2. I move the commission adopt the order on consent agreement and Public Service Commission Continental Resources, Inc. Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU15699.
Second.
Thank you, Julie. This one is, it seems like every couple meetings we cross new territory. This is one where I hadn't quite seen how this had played out before, but basically what we have is that the commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from Keith Ernst with Ernst Trenching, alleging a violation by Continental Resources that they violated North Dakota Century Code by not being able to locate their facilities within 24 inches. And so this is kind of a reverse. Usually it'll be the company that owns the facilities filing a complaint against the excavator for not doing something right. Well, in this case, the excavator couldn't find Continental's stuff, and Continental couldn't locate it for them, so certainly there was a backstory here. But the long and short of it is Ernst filed the complaint alleging that Continental violated the law by not being able to locate or mark or otherwise provide the approximate horizontal location of the underground facility of the operator. Advocacy staff filed a formal complaint. Continental filed a response, and there was a lot of discussion that took place back and forth, but basically the consent agreement today, basically, Continental agrees to remit $7,500 payable to the North Dakota Public Service Commission. And the good thing about this, I think, is that the excavator brought this to the attention of the commission. The commission staff had a lot of discussion with Continental. It sends a larger message, I think, to the companies that own facilities. You better be able to locate it, and if you can't locate them, you better go be able to find them. And so it's kind of beyond the scope of this consent order today. But it is a significant fine today of $7,500. But when you consider the potential damage that could have occurred, luckily the excavator was smart enough to work this out before they got the excavation taken care of. And you know, the consent order today is what we're voting on, but, you know, the backstory here is they have a certain period of time to locate the facilities. Continental was not able to do that, but they eventually were able to locate all the facilities. And so at the end of the day, the right thing happened, and I think that the lessons learned by Continental hopefully will share through the rest of Common Ground Alliance. But everything today appears to be in order, and I appreciate Vic and our staff for working through an agreement on this.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. I have item BK3, but before I do that, I just point out that in the testimony I gave here a few minutes ago downstairs about our one call, the commission has processed over 160 cases since we started doing this in 2009 session. And of that, over $140,000 of fines have been levied going through the general fund. And so, we started on a slow approach, and I think it's still the right approach of training, education, cooperativeness, all that thing. The goal is not to fine people, it's to protect the infrastructure. But we continue, I think, to find these scenarios where things are revealed that we haven't seen before, that we address them, and that becomes, I guess, almost the lessons learned and some of the changes to the one-call bill that is being presented downstairs are a result of some of the cases and the challenges we've had. And one of the things that's in that bill is where companies have to be able to locate their things, and I suspect that came out of some of the discussion involved the Continental case. So, okay, item BK3. I move the commission adopt the order and notice on default in Public Service Commission Bighorn Underground LLC Damage Prevention Enforcement case number PU16400.
Second.
Thank you, Julie. In this case, we also have a first today. This is the first time the commission has issued an order on default. And the background here is MDU filed a violation of a third-party damage complaint alleging that Bighorn Underground did not use the appropriate did not follow the appropriate part of North Dakota Century Code. They filed the complaint. Our staff deemed it was prima facie and moved forward with it. Bighorn did respond to the initial call from the commission staff on July 20th, but in the following discussion, Bighorn did not return any of the staff's call. They did not return any of the letters that we sent, so we send them a certified letter saying, listen, you've had a complaint filed against you. What are you going to do about it? They did not respond in the appropriate period of time, and so based on North Dakota law, we can't find them in default because they have not responded to it. And so this is the first time we've done that, and I think it's the right thing to do. You work with companies to a certain period of time. If they have given notice that they have not followed through with the appropriate things they're supposed to do, you can't just let it go. You have to do the right thing. In this case, you find them in default because they've failed to respond. And the fine that will be levied today is for $1,100. So it was their first-time occurrence, and so the fine is appropriate. But this is also we really tried to work hard with groups back and forth to get to some kind of resolution. But you get to those cases where you've got people, companies that just walk away from us. You can't let that happen. So today is yet one more step in the enforcement of it. I think it's very appropriate, and we'll just see how it all plays out.
We have a motion, a second. Is there any further discussion?
I have a question regarding the amount of the penalty. I guess just compared to the first two, it seems on the low side. And I know we had kind of some guidelines for potential damages. A gas line was probably a bigger issue than a water line, for instance, and how many people were without power or gas or something like that, I believe, was factored in. But I'm wondering how we come to this, that the two companies previously that worked with staff on coming to a settlement actually had heavier penalties than the company that just ignored us.
Sure. I give you my thought is that the previous two cases, they were both consent orders, and the max fine that can be levied is $25,000. So in those first two cases, you had strikes of gas facilities and the discussion. See, we really have no idea the discussion between advocacy staff and the companies, but with a max fine of $25,000 being able to be out there, I think that the discussion that occurs back and forth is to find what's appropriate for the set of facts. And so the first case, the $2,000, I suspect that they looked at the potential damage that could have been taken and how the company was able to work back and forth. They settled on $2,000. The next case, you've got a larger facility, a larger company, a larger risk that could have taken place. and back to that max fine of $25,000. They settle in on $7,500. We don't have to accept these. We can, of course, have a hearing and judge the facts in ourselves. And the last one on default, that one, you know, the damages were about $1,000 in facilities. This is the first order that we have ever done on default. And speaking for myself, I think that in something like this, you start out with $1,100, and we see what may come of this. If they can appeal this, if they would come back, I thought it might be too heavy-handed the first time we would do a default to go out and do something of $10,000 or more. Because the big thing that I picked up from the discussion with all the stakeholders is the big thing that there's a judgment by this commission. But then if they want to use that for something else, they can. So I'm certainly open if you would like to increase the fine to a default. But I think, for me, that's how we layered this out.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Kulk, I think that the fine level, I don't think it matters whether this is the first time or not, how big the fine is, because I think the fine should be appropriate to what the harm was and the issue that they caused. But I think in this case, the fact that it was, like you said, only $1,000 worth of damage, and there were actually no customers on this line at all. It was in a new development where there wasn't any customers affected. I think $1,000 is an appropriate level to start at with this type of damage. So I support the $1,000, and I also strongly support the staff moving forward in this manner on cases where the companies and the people that violate these laws just ignore us. And so they have to know that this is serious, that we're going to continue to pursue these issues to our full extent. And this is one of the tools that we have and we'll be using this time for the first time and in all times in the future when people are ignoring us. That's what my hope would be, that our approach will be moving forward.
I agree with that, especially the part about not being able to just ignore the process like this company has chosen to do. You know, it's one thing if a contractor's out there and does something and there's a dispute about their responsibility or a dispute about the circumstances that maybe they just felt there was no alternative but to commit the violation or something like that, but to just ignore us, you know, it just can't be overlooked, or that will become standard operating procedure. Absolutely. For everybody. So
I would also, too, Mr. Chair, like to elaborate on what Commissioner Fedorchak said about the number of violations. I think you're actually right, Commissioner, that it's one of the factors that they look at, it is when they look at the fines, but you're right, the harm is probably the most important factor. If in the past we've looked at, you know, was there a fatality involved, the amount of people that were out of services, and the commission, I can think of the commissioners, only in a couple times we've been directed our staff to go out and do an investigation which resulted in a complaint, and that's when there was a loss of life. But you're absolutely right that it's not the major factor. The major factor is the harm. So, but I think this is appropriate, and I applaud staff for doing it, because I was down in one of the interim hearings and quite honestly got the heck kicked out of me by people, why these cases aren't moving along. And then the previous committee I testified in front of, they said we're finding too much. So I think they're starting to get an understanding down there of how important it is to protect this infrastructure, and the desires, I think, of the stakeholders and the legislative bodies is us to move these cases along, not to just let them continue where we try to work something out. And usually you get to a certain point where you can work something out, and if you can't, those companies are not willing to work it out, then you got to move forward. And I think our staff has found the right tone on that right now.
And these, as we've seen just in recent cases, there was a significant explosion out in Oregon, in downtown Oregon, where a gas line was struck by a contractor and the whole building exploded and there was a couple people killed. And so, yeah, this is serious business and it has to be taken seriously, and part of it is enforcing the rules, and that's our job. So this is a good tool for doing that. I did note, and I tried to get this corrected before, but I couldn't find the staff. There's one typo in the background information that I can point out to staff after the meeting that we should correct. It's just on page 2. The dates don't match up on when some of the stuff was filed, so we got to correct that March 2016 date. Doesn't make sense.
Good catch.
Okay.
And then I think we can move forward with the motion with that correction noted.
And I don't know if I said it, but this last one, Bighorn, was in Jamestown. I forgot the previous one, Continental Resources. That was actually in the city area of Rain, North Dakota, so I didn't say that in the previous motion.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. And finally, last but not least, item BK4. I move the commission adopt the order issuing a certificate of public convenience and necessity number 5899 in Northern State Power Company's 230 KV transmission line, Ward and McHenry County's public convenience and necessity, case number PU16644.
Second.
Thank you, Julie. In September of this year, NSP filed an application for a certificate of public convenience and necessity to construct a Minot load serving project in the Magic City substation, approximately 20 miles of new 230 KV transmission line, basically to shore up the grid up in that Minot area. In October of this year, we issued a notice of opportunity for hearing, providing until November of 2016 for comments, so we did not receive any. We actually had a discussion with NSP and an informal in November. We went through all their projects that are out there. This is one that we've been tracking for several years. It's actually going to help out Minot quite a bit, so it's the right thing to do. And I suspect we'll have probably a siting hearing at some point in time on the 230 line. Correct, Dave? You're not just going to build it, are you? No? Okay. We'll see. So, no, I do appreciate Xcel's work in the grid. Actually, I was thinking back, you know, the time that I've been here, the amount of improvements we've done in the grid in the state are tremendous. And you think about what Xcel has done in Otter Tail and those CapEx lines and some of the other line, what Basin Electric has done with the lines that they've built in the western part of the state, Minn Kota building that transmission line from Center to Grand Forks. I think the first hearings we had in the Center to Grand Forks line was the first time in over 20 years the commission had held hearings on major transmission lines, and we've had a lot of those the last few years. So certainly support this and look forward to Xcel getting to complete the work and keep the lights on and mind it.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
So was it, are you trying to say it was the year of the transmission
line? It was the year of the transmission line. I'm just saying.
And what is this year?
I got to think about that. Would have meant for that pipeline discussion, transmission line would have dominated the news.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Jerry, do you know the cost of that 230 KV line in that substation? Because you know Dave is going to ask that question. $50 million? Roughly $50 million. And then we've moved that, and BK5 has been moved to consent, and another part of BK5, the scheduling of the antelope, that we moved to scheduling. So that's what was brought up. Because we gave Casey the dates, and she didn't like them. So.
Well, that concludes your portfolio.
I'm done. I don't have anything on this agenda.
Pretty light on the Commissioner Fedorchak's portfolio.
Yeah.
How does that work out? She was the chair, and now she's not and has no motions. I'm just curious how that plays out.
There'll be a couple on the next agenda.
Okay. We'll stand in recess for questions, after which we'll reconvene for announcements.
Just a couple of things real quick. The Bighorn, you said that was Jamestown?
Yes, sir.
And that was a subdivision that was under construction?
Correct.
I got gas line?
Yes, 2-inch natural gas mainline, intersection of 16th Street and 17th Avenue in Jamestown, a new subdivision with no active gas customers. I can give you this cheat sheet I have, Dave, and all three if you want.
Okay, sure. Your budget is coming up, as you mentioned, Monday. What kind of major changes are we going to see in that budget?
I think probably the biggest changes is a kind of a complete restructuring that I couldn't even just repeat off the top of my head. But, you know, we have eliminated two director positions and replaced one of them. But in kind of a reconfigured manner, where we have now put weights and measures, the rail safety program, and the grain and hay licensing into one portfolio under one director, and that's Ms. Conrad Crockford here. And then there's a kind of an associated bill, House Bill, I think it's 1126. That makes some pretty significant changes to the grain licensing program and the way we handle that would certainly lessen the costs associated with grain licensing. And there's a separate bill to eliminate the hay buyer licensing, which we have not had any licensees for years anyway, so that's not much of a factor in this, but it's out there. With passage of House Bill 1126, the plan would be then to eliminate both the inspector positions and open it up for the hiring of one inspector. And with those changes, it'll be that savings. The budget that we have proposed makes the one temporary position in the rail safety program a permanent position. And we also, as part of our reductions during the biennium, the allotments, did not hire a temporary weights and measures position, and we would propose leaving that out. So the bottom line is, between temporary positions and FTEs, we are proposing a net reduction of three fewer people here. And we've also got a project going on to really upgrade their computer system and change, and that's part of that House Bill 1126 that is necessary in order to develop this to its full potential, but for electronic licensing of the grain elevators, which is going to save a lot of money. So that's part of the project as well. What did I miss in there?
I thought that was pretty good. I think that hit spot on the mark. I think from my viewpoint, the discussion is going to center around is, you know, we put together, I think, a great proposal of doing what the governor wanted, restructuring, changing the way to make it more efficient. You know, what's next is what's coming. What else is the legislature going to want? I think it might be the big spur point for us, because if we can get the rail position permanent, there'll be some discussion about, you know, we asked for an additional natural gas inspector that was not in the governor's recommended budget. I'm sure that'll come up again. There's a litigation fund that we have been successful in having, that there'll be discussion around that. But you know, based on what I heard Governor Burgum say yesterday, he said, you've done a great job, but now is the time to really cut. So it'll be interesting as this plays out what may happen.
I would add to that our budget really does more with less. I mean, you look at our jurisdiction, it hasn't changed. In fact, we've taken on more work, especially in the area of the rail safety program. So we'd have 45 FTEs moving forward, and that includes making permanent one of the rail positions that was a temporary position. And all of the work that we're doing on siting, on overseeing the utility industry, on overseeing grain licensing, overseeing coal mining and reclamation, all of that continues. And so we're looking at, in a very proactive way, creative ways to use technology and innovation and staffing to maximize our ability to do the jobs we're supposed to be doing, to do them really well, and do them with less.
And just to further expand on that, on the doing more with less part of it, and these numbers won't come. I'm going from the top of my head. I'm not sure where I'm off just a little bit. But Brian talked earlier about the number of damage enforcement complaints that have been handled in the last four bienniums. Well, I compiled some statistics on that. In the first of those four, there was one. In the second of those four bienniums, I think it was around 15 or 20. Last biennium, there were close to 60, and we're on pace to probably be over 60 this biennium. So it's been a huge uptick in that workload, and they're very complex, high work intensity situations. In the first three-fourths of this current biennium, we've cited almost $5.5 billion worth of infrastructure. I don't remember the number of separate siting cases, but it's enormous. You know, we talk about the oil and gas industry as being slowed way down, but from a siting perspective, the number of cases that we've handled, and whether we go and process a case that's a few miles or 40 or 50 miles, there's not that much difference in our costs and time associated with it. And so it really hasn't slowed down in that regard. So there's a lot of work being done here.
You know, Dave, if I can expand upon Randy's point about the number of cases, I've got that question a lot since the election, what's going to happen to the future of energy development and all that, and I said, listen, we're going to keep being busy up here. You know, the Enbridge pipeline, the Sandpiper has been approved. We'll see how that plays out. The Dakota Access, we'll see how that plays out. But, you know, the major pipelines may not be coming in front of us like we've seen. But we've got three wind developers sitting right over here. I know NextEra is eagerly looking at a lot of projects. So is Antelope Valley. I mean, there's going to be more wind farms that are built in the state because there's a need, there's a desire, and there's the opportunity. There's gas projects that are coming. So a lot of the questions I've already got downstairs are, well, you guys are slowing down up there. No, we're not. We're not slowing down at all. We've still got the rate cases. MDU is filed. XL will be back around here again here very shortly. I mean, Otter Tail, it's just a matter of they come back in. So there's a tail to all this growth for the investor owns, but we're still going to see wind projects. We're still going to see solar projects. We're still going to see transmission build out. And so I don't really think we're going to see a slowdown. It's just, like Randy said, it may be a shifting from one type of siting project to another.
You don't get one-word answers here, do you?
But maybe we'll get on this one. You know, limiting the hay buyer license, was that the last straw? Hey, it's a new year. I have to.
Can we use that tomorrow, or do you absolutely have that copyrighted?
Feel free.
That's good.
Oh, that's a good one. All right.
Okay, we'll reconvene for announcements, and I should have been ready, shouldn't I? On Thursday, January 19th, we have a formal hearing on the Savage Bakken Connector Pipeline, right back to what we were just talking about, 10-inch crude oil pipeline up in Williams County. That will be a hearing that will be handled by an administrative law judge, and that will take place at the Ernie French Center in Williston, North Dakota.
Isn't that the NDSU?
The NDSU Energy Center there. On Monday, January 23rd is the first of 2 days of public input sessions, and this is, I think, really important to a lot of people, at least all the MDU electric customers. The first of the two opportunities for public input is an evening opportunity at 7:30 p.m., and we will hold those here in the hearing room at the Capitol on 12th floor. It'll also be open up at the NDSU Research Center, the Ernie French Center in Williston, as well as at Dickinson State University in Kleinfelter Hall, room 216. And again, that's at 7:30 p.m. on Monday, January 23rd. Then 2 days later, on January 25th, we'll have a day session for people who would rather maybe comment at that time. That'll be held at 12 noon, and it'll be here on the 12th floor of the Capitol again in our hearing room, also in Williston at the Ernie French Center. Again, in Dickinson at Dickinson State University, it's set for this time. It's also in Kleinfelter, but it's in the Beck Auditorium this time. So there's that distinction. On Monday evening in Dickinson, it's in Kleinfelter, room 216. On Wednesday noon, it's at Kleinfelter Beck Auditorium. And then moving on from that, on January 30th, we have a work session regarding NSP's electric rate increase. I think that's all there is for announcements that I'm aware of. Anyone else have any other announcements? Any other unfinished business? Okay, this regular scheduled meeting is adjourned.